Hey, Livin' for Food listeners. Thanks for coming back, and I hope you're having a wonderful week so far. I just came off the most amazing trip to Ireland and Iceland, so I'm on such a high from that right now because Iceland was such a magical and incredible place. So I'm sure I'll be talking about that many times in my future episodes. But first, I want to introduce this week's guest. My lovely friend Erica is such an incredible person. We met last year early in the fall at a lovely trip full of journalists and influencers in Wyoming, and she agreed to come on my podcast. So we literally couldn't stop laughing in this episode. So if you needed something lighthearted and fun, this is the episode to listen to. Erica is one of the country's leading female pitmasters. She was a criminal defense attorney at one point. She made her way to Food Network and won the show. And she's a mom. She is a certified sommelier. And I'm excited for you to hear more about her journey. So please join me in welcoming the lovely Erica Robbie.
One, two.
Thank you so much for coming on during the
Heck
day and actually working during the day and getting things done. I appreciate
yeah.
it.
It's like pulling Dracula out of his lair. Like, how did this
No, literally. You should have seen me an hour ago.
30 minutes ago, girl.
10 minutes. Honestly, yeah, I'm too generous. I got ready about 30 minutes ago.
Was like looking for a hairbrush. I'm like, I know you brush your hair. Where is it?
I didn't even do that, so you're one step ahead of me. I love it. So it's so great to see you again. I just for listeners and so they're aware, me and Erica met on a press trip. This was early September, I believe, so a few months ago, in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, which was like the most lovely and beautiful place on the planet. It was so nice, and I think about it often,
Me
honestly.
too.
So peaceful. It was hosted by Lone River Ranch Water, which is like a hard seltzer brand, and they're incredible. I knew you were cool when I met you, but then when I was researching, I was like, damn, this girl is so freaking cool. You're so accomplished. Like, what the
I
heck?
know it's like the problem, like we said, of always having so many irons in the fire, and it's like you just keep achieving different things, but it's like, are you just gonna pick one thing? And then it's like, no, we can do it all.
Story of my life. I literally want to do everything because I have so many interests and so many just like because I love literally everything. I love shopping, I love food, I love fashion, I love music, I love like I'll literally do anything. So then it's like I have a million things going in my head all the time. So I'm always trying to get different things done. But you've accomplished so much. So that's a testament to you. I am going to give listeners a little bit of your background. I kind of like to start talking about your childhood first to get a little bit more of a sense of what you're like and everything. So, you're one of the country's leading female pitmasters, a criminal defense attorney, a level two certified sommelier, a mom, a wife. You've had like an incredible journey. You were born in Nebraska. I did my research just.
No, I'm so happy. I'm like, yeah, she
Not
honest.
to throw you off, but I'm going to know some
I love
things.
it. I love it because I research people all the
Okay, good.
time.
Okay. You were born in Nebraska and then relocated to Ohio as a child. Were the culinary arts something that ran in your family early on?
I would say yes and no. My dad, his whole family, they're from New Orleans. And so you're just by default of being in New Orleans, being raised there, you're a foodie. I mean, the whole culture is around food. So my dad was always cooking. It was basically for survival because my mom cannot cook. So it was like we starved to death and my little baby daughter dies. Or I get in the kitchen and I start cooking. So my dad was just like always cooking. And it was just kind of one of those things, like just being, I guess, being around it, but it wasn't ever talked about. It was just like life. And I didn't realize what a foodie was or, you know, culinary. I didn't know what that was. I just assumed everybody ate like that in their house.
Yeah, I get that. I feel like both of my parents cooked, but I wouldn't say they're like crazy, anything crazy elaborate or anything like that. But my mom would always have like dinner ready, and my dad is Italian, so he makes like red sauce every Sunday, which I've forever. Now somehow adapted on my own, I realized yesterday. I read that your parents were entrepreneurs, and you know, while that was an exciting time, you kind of took the primary cook role on.
Yes.
Essentially, I guess. So is this when you had your first experience with barbecuing and grilling?
Yeah. So at the time, my parents, not only had they started a business, but my mom was also going to night school getting her MBA.
Oh, wow.
So It was just like, there was no time for anything. And we were poor. So it wasn't like we could go eat out.
Yeah, I understand.
So like that wasn't happening. It wasn't like we had takeout boxes everywhere. I don't even know if that was a thing. I don't even think I did takeout or anything until I was like in law school. But
fair.
But no, so I would be home and I'd be hungry. And I knew that like my mom and dad were going to be hungry too. And they were just so beat down and tired. So of course, I took that as my opportunity to go into the kitchen because I knew I wasn't going to get any resistance. Like they were too tired to fight me. Like, you know, like I'm like a little 9-year-old, like firing up the stove, firing up the grill, and just being like, don't die.
Just don't catch anything on fire.
That's yeah, don't horrible. Burn the house down and it's a win. And so it was at that time that I had gotten a Betty Crocker cookbook.
Like, oh my gosh.
I found it. It must have been like my mom or my dad's, and I found it. And I was just like, oh my gosh, like there's actually things called recipes. Where you can create, you know. So I'm sitting there reading this old cookbook and I'm loving it. And then I'm like, oh, I'm going to try that. I'm going to try this. And then all of a sudden I realize we don't have any of those ingredients in the house. So
like, that happens to me all the time.
So I was like, I'm not making any of this, but I'll improvise because I want that, but I don't have the things to make that. Uh-huh. And so like, I started cooking and then I was like, oh, I'm going to make this romantic for my parents. So I took like I think it was Polly Pocket or Holly Hobbit or something.
Oh, Polly Hobby.
Yeah, or Polly Pocket. And it was like bed sheets that we got from Walmart. And I like hung them up with pin tacks over like the entrance to the kitchen. And I found candles. And so I lit candles.
Oh my gosh.
Like, yeah, I know. Like this 9-year-old, she's so weird.
No, that's incredible. How romantic you were.
Yeah, right. Like I was like, oh, I'm going to make this like fine dining. And so then I'm like sitting there and I'm like, I'm putting out this awful food I made. And so, and I had all the lights off. And so I remember like I called my parents down and I was like, please come to the kitchen. And they're just like, okay. And we still have like plastic on our furniture. My parents are like old school.
So, oh my gosh. That like, reminds me of my grandparents. Yeah.
We had a dining room, but nobody was actually allowed to ever be in there. Like it had to be a special occasion. So I was like, oh, I can't use that beautiful table. I have to use the kitchen table. So I like called them down and I have them like coming down and I'm feeding them and I'm like telling them what I'm serving them. And I made like this chicken dish. And so I remember like my parents were about to sit down and eat it. And all of a sudden my dad like goes to my mom and he's like, wait a minute. And he clicks the light on. And so I'm like so mad because he's ruined my ambiance.
He divides.
Like, yeah. I was like, what are you doing? And he's like, I need to make sure you cook the chicken all the way through. Like not that is not undercooked. And I was like so offended. I was like, oh, how dare you? But then I was like, oh, crap, you can undercook chicken. What does that mean?
Yeah. Okay. And was it?
No. So he's like cutting through it. And he's like, it's perfectly cooked. He's like, you're good. So he like clicks the lights back on. And we just have like this like total amazing evening. And I think.
I realize that cooking could be an experience and it could take you into, you know, a different circumstance or vibe or feeling that might not necessarily be your reality, but it's your reality at that moment. And I just wanted to like keep doing those moments. So I think that's really when it like kicked off and it started.
That's so sweet. I remember when you said the Betty Crocker cookbook, my mom has one. Was it red?
Yes!
Yeah, my mom had the same one. And I would look through it all the time. And then she would add recipe. She still does this, but she would add like her famous like cookie recipe or like whatever into it. So we would always be like, get the Betty Crocker cookbook. I remember that. That's so cute.
I wish I still had that. And now I'm going to go on like thrift books or eBay and go buy
it. I know. You should. And then it'll be a memory for your child.
Oh my God. Later. My son, I have probably, I mean, I literally have cookbooks everywhere. I probably have about 200 cookbooks.
Oh my gosh.
And I mean,
you have like a library of cookbooks?
I really do. And I can't, it's like my, it's what do they call that? Your a toxic trait. Anywhere I go, I pick up cookbooks, even if like
I like to think it's a nice hobby. It's a nice hobby.
But my son, I'll be like, oh, go grab me, you know, the New Orleans cookbook from Commander's Palace. Go grab this one. And he'll just be like in there and I'll just hear like things collapsing. And I'm like, I have too many cookbooks. But I think there are. Like, it's great to have a lot of cookbooks because then you know, like, somewhere in there, they're always going to have your back. Like, you'll be able to pull off anything. Even if you don't have the ingredients for one recipe, like, you got 8 million recipes behind you where your ingredients can work.
It just might take some time to find it.
Send my 6-year-old in. He'll find it for you.
Yeah. If he's not under books collapsed.
Poor kid.
I think I'm on my way to probably 200 too. I literally live, I need a bigger apartment for that, for sure.
For your books?
For my books, because, well, I also have so many lovely people on here, but then they also were like, hey, this person's coming, so I'm going to send you their cookbook. So I'm like, they're stacking up, and now I don't have enough room in my cabinet anymore. So they're literally, I have like 6 right next to me on my table right now.
I put them like under the bed. I put them in crazy places.
A little late night reading.
For when we're not sleeping anyway.
Yeah, there you go. Honestly, I should be reading probably than scrolling on Instagram. Was there someone in the food industry when you started, you know, when you made that perfectly cooked chicken, were you watching television? Was there someone that you looked up to as a kid?
Yeah, so I don't even know how I found it, but it's kind of weird because I always thought that I was younger than I was when I found it. But I still remember, like, I remember it. I saw Nigella Lawson, and she had a show called Nigella Bites. And I would just be sitting there for hours, like, trying to catch the show and watching it and just being absolutely enthralled and obsessed with this woman. And I can tell you to this day, there is nobody that I have been obsessed with and in love with like Nigella. Like, nobody can even compare. And I've cooked with everybody, I've met everybody, but Nigella has my heart. Like,
have you met her?
I haven't. I think I would faint. It's probably for the better that I haven't met her.
I think that sometimes too. I'm like, despite my job literally being interviewed, like interviewing people who have a status, you know, I don't think I could actually meet my true heroes because I'll like pass away.
No, I remember. So it was so funny. My husband and I were always like, oh, you know, who would be your one like cheat, your celebrity crush that if you're ever around this person, like it's game on. And so for the longest time, I was always saying Idris Elba. I was like, oh, Idris Elba. Oh. It's well, off, blah, blah, blah. Like you're never supposed to meet this person. You're just talking crap. So I'm on the Today Show and one of the producers walks by and says like, Idris Elba is coming.
No.
I lost my mind. Like I was like, I felt like a trapped rat. Like I didn't know where to go. I didn't know where to put my hands. I was like terrified.
Wait, that's so funny. Did you talk to him?
No, thank God. Once again, he was like in a different green room and we never crossed paths because I could not vouch for his safety. I don't know what would happen had we met.
You had to play it cool. You had to play it cool though.
Oh, I can't. Like I'm the worst. No, it would have been a total train wreck. I would have been escorted out by the police, like thrown out into the streets of New York.
That's so funny. I'm trying to think of who that is for me. See, I have so many. I feel like, oh, Michael B. Jordan.
Oh, girl.
I actually would die. I would die. I went to this dinner and I had one of the chefs at the dinner on recently. He was just on my last one and he had just done a commercial with Michael B. Jordan. And I was like, was Michael B. Jordan in this room? Like, did he sit in the seat?
Where was he?
I was like, sat in the seat? Like, he's still around.
Did he use a fork? Which fork was it?
Yeah. Did he eat on these plates? I need all of the details. But obviously inside I was like, oh, cool. So same. Cool that he was around here. But inside I was like internally hyperventilating.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Of course.
Okay. Anyways. Great. Nigella Lawson's amazing.
My favorite.
She's incredible. I think someone I looked up to too is Ina Garten because I've seen her like so much on everything, and then I got to see her speak in New York like a few years back, and she just
amazing.
It just amazes me how you can go from someone as a home cook with like no culinary training to building like this dynasty that people all look up to, and like 11 cookbooks later, it's just as wild to me. And she's still
her working. And Martha Stewart, her and Martha. I just watched that Martha Stewart documentary and just like how driven she was and how ambitious. And I was like, man, if I weren't so lazy, like
I get tired.
I get tired. My brain gets tired.
No, that's so relatable. I've yet to watch that documentary, but everyone has told me to, and I really need to. I've heard it's because she's an interesting character, and I need
I don't know if I like her, or I love her, or I'm scared of her, or maybe a mix of all of it.
I think all of it. This is like a long story, but she came around, like I met her when I was super young. Because she grew up in Connecticut, or she's from Connecticut, where I'm from. So there was this whole thing that was going on where she was going to be the host of this show. And then I ended up meeting her for like, a short period, but she like was kind of scary. Like when she came into the room, like, I feel like the energy changed, so amazing too. So I'm really at a juxtaposition here.
Like the killer's in the house.
Well,
it was funny. I was on, I forget if it was Good Morning America or Today's Show, but she was on the segment right before me, and we share like the same kitchen area. And after she left, I like ran over there and I grabbed a pair of tongs and I was like, did she use these? Are these Martha's tongs? Did she touch these? And they were like, probably. I don't know.
She comes here all the time.
Yeah. I was like, oh, the sacrilege.
Maybe it would give you like good karma into your segment, you know?
That's what I was hoping. I was like, maybe just by touching it, like I'll just become amazing.
Yeah, then you'll have like a whole horse farm and everything later. It'll be in your future. Yeah, I've got to watch that and then I'll report back.
Please do. I want to know your thoughts for real.
Okay. Because I did see that one clip of her talking about her husband and like how like she cheated on him. And I was like, that's low-key problematic, but also the most iconic thing I've ever seen.
It was iconic, but it was just like, have some awareness, woman. Like, yeah. Whoa. But she's just like, she's just blunt like that.
Oh, yeah. I know. I don't know if I aspire to be that blunt.
No.
I think I do.
No.
Well, maybe she'll come on this podcast one day and then I'll have to delete our episode. Just.
I won't have any questions. I'll be like, girl, do it.
Okay. Cool. Then you were in Miami for a while, so as a criminal defense attorney, which is so cool to me. I was like a political science major, so my brain was like, oh my god, that's so cool.
Oh my god.
And then, you know, you became a managing partner at another firm. So talk me through why this was the career path you chose initially, even with your love for cooking.
Yeah, so my mom and dad were like, you can be anything you want to be in this world as long as it's a doctor or a lawyer.
Ah.
So those are like my two choices. And I know that like my math skills are bad, so I don't want to kill a patient.
I understand.
I know how bad my math skills are. I can't even calculate discounts at Walmart. Like, no, we're not going to be trying to like calculate dosages and trying to save people. Like, no, stay in your lane. So I was like, I'll just go to law school because I love talking and, you know, all that stuff. So I went to law school and I hated it. Like,
oh no.
It was just the most miserable experience ever. I didn't even like most of the people. Like for the first time in my life, like usually like people laugh. They're like, what's your spirit animal? And I was like, I'm like the family dog, like the golden retriever. Like I love everybody. I like everybody. It was the first time in my life where I was just completely introverted. I could not stand probably 99% of the people there. I didn't like their energy, their vibe, what they stood for.
It was competitive, you know?
Yeah. I was just like, ew, this is awful.
Yeah.
And so then my final year, I got into these legal clinics representing children out in the community that were in criminal cases. And like, I was just like, oh, I could do this forever. Like, you know, going into battle, the high stakes, the adrenaline, you know, going up in front of a judge and, you know, you got everything on the line. Like, I liked that. So I was like, okay, if there's going to be one takeaway from this whole like 3-year debacle, it's going to be that like, it was a lot of work. Thank God I was young and I had nothing better to do. But
but put yourself in debt and
go. Yeah, just put myself in debt and be like, okay, it's all right.
I'm hey, I did the same, so it doesn't even matter.
Yeah. I was like, I've been poor my whole life. It's fine.
Yeah.
And so, so after that, then I moved down to Miami and I was just like, this is where I'm going to be. I always felt like a connection to Miami. I didn't know that like I had family history there. So I thought that was kind of odd.
Oh, okay.
I just felt like a connection.
Yeah.
And so I went down there and all of a sudden I was just like, this is amazing. And I was like, and I'm a lawyer in the city. I'm living in a high rise downtown. It's like, this is the life.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm partying every night and going out to fancy dinners. Like I'm wearing stilettos because I actually have a job.
Hey, I watch Suits. I know how it is.
Yeah. So I was just like, this is the life. So it was really great, like in my 20s to be doing that. But always in the back of my head, I knew that this wasn't my home. Like, this isn't where I'm supposed to be, but I didn't know what else to do. Like,
well, just I mean, put all this poured literally so much time and money and effort.
Yeah. So I was like, well, I guess we're here and like find a hobby or find something. And then I was also single. So I was like, and all of my friends started getting married and I was just like, oh no. I was like, oh no, I need to get married. Like I need to do something. So look around, who can you find that's like not a drug addict or like some high functioning alcoholic.
Why am I still having that issue today?
It's so bad. It's so true.
Or just nobody talks about it.
Yeah. Nobody talks about it. And so then I was just like, okay, I was like, you know, I'm going to do that. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, okay, I'm tired of being broke. I remember I won a double attempted murder trial and all I wanted to do was go to Bed Bath & Beyond and buy myself a comforter, a new comforter, so I could go to sleep.
Oh, my gosh.
And I couldn't because I was broke. Like, and I was like, ah, this sucks.
You can ask, like, a defense attorney, I guess.
I was a public defender.
Oh,
so
wow.
I think when I came out, I think the starting salary gross was like 32 or 36,000.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And you only got paid once a month.
So- what? For literally high stakes murder trials? That's wild. Because the amount of time you're putting into that too is like insane.
My whole life. I had installed a private phone line in my house so that clients could call me during emergencies. Like, so if I knew if that phone rang, it was a landline, I knew that was a client calling me for an emergency. They've been arrested or they had like a tip or a witness that I needed to go hunt down. I did almost all my own investigations. Like, yeah.
Crazy to me. This country's messed up sometimes.
I know. So I was just like, I was like perma broke. So I decided that I was going to go out. I was like, if I can put this much time into like, you know, the public defender's office, I can go out and start my own firm.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I think a hawk is attacking my chickens.
Oh no. Do you need to go?
It'll be over soon.
Oh. Wait, do you need to go like chase it away? Like what?
No, I have little shelters for them to run to when there's like an aerial predator. Oh, okay. So they're pretty good.
Oh,
it's either that or they're mating. Like, I never know.
Okay.
They squawk all day.
That's two really different things.
It sounds the same.
I'm like, I don't know if you need to go run right now. Or like what?
No, I'm looking. They're all running by the back porch. So clearly,
oh my God.
I don't know what it was. But yeah, so then I was like, I'm going to go out and like start my own firm and be my own man, you know, kind of thing. And so I liked it, and I started making money, but then I was still like unhappy. I just like, it looked from the outside, my life looked really good, but inside, like I was really empty. Like because I wasn't being authentic to like who I really was supposed to be, but I was too scared to actually like dive into those feelings and be honest with who I want it to be, because I was like, no, you've already spent all this time. Like, you're stuck. This is your role.
Right.
And so then my husband at the time, you see where that's going? Okay.
I see you.
Yeah, you see me. So he ended up getting, he said, his dream job in Tampa. And he was like, we have to move. This is my dream job. You know, I've supported you as an attorney. Now I want you to support me as an attorney. Okay. And I was just like, okay. I was like, I can move my business up there and it'd be great. So we move up there. And it was like what I thought was the worst mistake of my life. It was the most miserable time. Like, my business that I had really didn't transfer. So I'd be like having to drive back down to Miami and try to conduct hearings or pay another attorney. It was awful. So I was just like, oh my gosh, this isn't sustainable. I was like, I'm going to have to like regroup and figure out like what I want to do because it's not working. And so then there was like a period where like I had nothing. I had nothing going on. I mean, I had this like cheap little owl sweatshirt and I would just be in it for like 3 days because nobody was checking for me. I had nowhere to go.
Yeah. I mean, I do that now, but that's because I
didn't. Yeah, that's like different now.
It's a little different because I'm just on my computer.
We know we're riding dirty.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I get obsessed with sweatshirts. My old roommate knows this, but I would wear them for a month and she'd be like, when are you going to wash that?
Yeah. I don't know when I get to it, when I don't want to wear it.
You know, when I have time. Yeah. Yeah.
When it overpowers me and I realize I need to.
Realize I stink.
See, I can't get away with that in Texas. Like, it's like one and done. Like, it has to go.
Fair. Yeah, it's too hot. It's too hot. As a sweater, personally, I can't deal with that.
Yeah. I was like, I feel bad for the sweater. Like, we're just going to stop.
It needs to wash more than I do.
I'm like the hottest water possible. Like, oh my God. But no. So then I just got in this really dark phase, dark point in my life. And like, I didn't have friends anymore because all my friends were in Miami.
Yeah.
And then like, I'm sitting in this town that I know nobody and I'm not really meeting anybody either for some reason. And then my husband at the time, he was just basically like, I'm living my best life. Screw you. And so I remember one day I was like on the porch drinking wine. What was my past life? As we do. And I remember he came home and I was just sitting there and I was like, I'm in the dumps. Like, you know, I've always been a lucky person and this is just awful. And, you know, I feel sad and, you know, everything. And I was looking for comfort, you know, something like, you know, like, okay, you did this for me. Like, I'm there for you. And he just looked at me and he was like, well, whose fault is that? You're in charge of your own happiness, and walked out. And I was like,
oh my God, I would have killed him.
Yeah. So after I played like all the scenarios have snapped in my head.
Brutal. That's brutal.
Yeah. But I realized like, that was God. That was the universe delivering a message to me to make sure that I heard it. And that was the only way I was going to hear that. Mm-hmm. And it was like at that moment, I just turned on a dime. And I was like, it became like my battle cry. I was like, you are in charge of your own happiness. And you have to invest in yourself. Like, nobody else is going to do that for you. That's up to you. And how are you going to turn this around and have like your comeback story and your glory? And so I realized at that moment that like I was put in Tampa because like God was tearing away all the branches that were dead and that were sucking energy from my roots that needed to grow. And that's why I needed to basically be put in a cosmic timeout.
Yeah.
So that I could realize that I had nothing left but to make a better future for myself. So I went and I started looking at things I wanted to do. And I was really into wine at the time. And there was a show called Psalm and I would watch it. And I was like, oh, that's amazing. Like, and they look like little lawyers, like they're wearing suits and, you know, they're doing wine. I was like, I want to learn about that. So I went out and I got a part-time job at a winery and a wine bar and a liquor store, stocking wines.
Oh my gosh.
And I really started working towards that goal. And I just remember finally, I was like, I'm going to make the move to California. Like, I'm going to go for it. Like, I'm going to, you know, Wine Central USA.
So this was Napa.
Yeah. I was like, and I'm going to make this happen. Like, I'm going to do it, like, until the wheels fall off. And so I told my husband at the time, I said, hey, because I'm not doing anything, I'm going to go out to culinary school. They have a wine program out in California in San Jose. And I'm going to go there and I'm going to like educate myself for my next act of whatever I'm going to do. And I remember him just being like, well, if you go, like, don't come back.
Oh,
and I was just like,
oh my God. My and I was heart. Like,
Yeah, but I was like, why? Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Ow. So I was like, but I won't be coming back. I was like, Erica, out. Like, you know. And so I literally, but then like clearly I was going through something. I dyed my hair bleach blonde.
Oh, that's how you know. When you change your hair, that's the tell sign.
Baby Jesus, somebody should have told me to stop. Like, maybe get some highlights, but do not go from black hair to like platinum blonde.
Yeah, that's so drastic. Mine is when I like pluck my eyebrows too thin.
Too much?
Yeah. I had a phase, my friend.
We both look like we were the extras off the cast of Dangerous Minds.
No, literally. I was like, I have yet to dye my hair because my mom instilled it in me. She was like, you have to keep your natural hair. Don't dye it.
Yes.
Don't dye it. So I've never dyed it, but I got through it in other ways.
You're like, I just plucked
other cosmetic journeys.
Oh my God, the things we women do, like that reflects our mental state.
It really does. Because you just like need a change, and that's the easiest, quick way to get it.
See it. You need to visualize the change that's happening inside.
Exactly. I need to see a picture.
And sometimes that comes out in overplucked eyebrows or platinum blonde hair.
I gotta see the hair though.
Oh, I will send you a photo because it is so bad. I think I kind of look like the guy off the Cheetos bag. Like, that's all I can, like, for some reason, I looked like the dude off the Cheetos bag. Like, it was so bad.
That's how I would look. I mean, like, I would not look good with blonde hair. I have olive undertones. Like, I would not. Did you bleach your eyebrows too?
No, I didn't. So I'm sitting there and I have like roots for days. Like, it was terrible. It was a train wreck. Like, and I don't know what I was thinking other than like, oh, going to California.
Yeah, people are blonde here. It's okay. You fit in.
Beyonce got blonde hair. You could do this. Mary J. Blige got blonde hair. You could do this. J-Lo got blonde hair.
See, they
no, they have like celebrity stylists. Yeah. They're not doing it from like a bottle.
No. they have a whole team, but they really steered us wrong in that.
And it's probably a wig or extensions. Like, stop, girl.
Yeah,
like,
no, correct.
So I go out to California and I get through culinary school and I'm just like obsessed and I meet people. Finally, I was like, I met my tribe, like the culinary kids, the blind kids. Like, we were all just, we were like a little band of misfits. Mm-hmm. Like,
that's how I feel with my friends here, honestly. Like, we're all just creatives and we barely all have a schedule. It's so bizarre. We're like, want to meet at 2 p.m. this Friday or like Wednesday? I'm going to Pilates. Like, it's just so funny.
Yeah, but it works. Mm-hmm. It works. When you meet your tribe, it just works. Yeah. And I never looked back. And I remember all of my friends from Miami, they were kind of like, wait, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
Was it almost like a clean break? Are your chickens okay?
I think they're good.
Okay. Pause for the chickens.
I was like, I heard like one like fly up against the glass. I'm like, are you okay?
You're gonna make me cry. I'm really empathetic when it comes to animals, so I'll just.
Oh, my animals are gangster. Like, my ranch is called Hot Mess Ranch.
Okay.
I have the most gangster, like, Houston, Texas chickens. They think that they're like little. They really think they're dinosaurs.
So they could fight a hawk off easy.
I mean, they try. Like, some of them have gotten the drop on them if they're not paying attention, but like, they'll gang up on anything. I think they bring dead snakes to the front door.
Ah.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I can't eat snakes.
They're pretty gangster.
Okay. Good for you for handling that. Cause if they brought, I would actually cry. I can't do that.
I just like the first few dead snakes, my soul exited my body.
Yeah.
And now I'm like desensitized to it.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, is it fully dead?
But you're gonna let it back in the wild near your yard.
I usually take them and I throw them across the street in like this open field.
Wait, just with your hand?
No, I have a tool.
Oh.
If they're still alive, please, I am not that gangster. I have a tool, and if they're still alive, I'll take them, carry them across the street, and like chuck them into a field. Because then I'm like, well, they won't come back across because they'll probably get hit by a car. So we're safe either way.
Okay, it's nature's turn now.
Yeah, I'm like, y'all are good. And then usually 2 seconds later, they get like hit by a car, picked up by a hawk. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Nature's
way of, nature's brutal. Yeah. Yeah, nature is not Disney Channel.
Oh my gosh. Well, even Disney Channel movies see Bambi.
It's like, why does a parent animal always have to die?
No, that's so for real. That's so true.
It's so tragic.
People are gonna listen to this and be like, where are their conversations going?
I think like 2 days ago I watched that Wild Robot movie because my son wanted to watch it.
Oh, was it good?
I was bawling through the whole thing.
Like, oh, then I shouldn't watch it because I will cry.
No, you should watch it. You should watch
why it. Was it sad? Did it's someone beautiful. Die?
No, but it was like they were the robot like landed on this planet and then there was like a little runt duck or goose.
Oh.
And she ended up like raising it because it didn't have anybody. Stop. And then she had to like let it go to be with like the other ducks.
Stop.
And I was bawling. I'm sitting on the couch with my son just bawling.
Was he like, Mom, are you okay?
He was like, it's a bird, Mama. What's your problem? It's a cartoon.
No, I get so empathetic with like cartoons and stuff. I can't. I was just talking about this the other day. If I look on TikTok and there's like a golden retriever just being cute or like literally if they're on the side of the road, like I actually will stop, like cry so hard.
Yeah. Oh, I cried the other day. It was like one of those deer rescue videos. It was like, and you know, those are fake,
yeah.
But where they show like they found this abandoned deer fawn and then they grow it up and then it's like bouncing around their house and stuff. I'm sitting there ugly crying to that stuff. Like,
no, me too. There was one that got me and it was AI the other day. It was literally a sea lion and it was fake, but I cried. I still cried because it was.
It doesn't matter because it's the principle behind it.
They're just beings like us.
But I'm suspect. I cried at Cool Runnings. Like nobody cried in the movie Cool Runnings but me.
Oh, I bet I could beat you in a cry off. My family could probably contest.
I'm always crying for no reason over stupid stuff. But then something serious, tragic will happen, and I'm like totally calm.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, let's handle this. Let's do this. But you put on a cartoon or an animal movie, I'm
no, bomb. I totally agree. I think I'm just emotional as a human. I think that's what it really comes down to. But I like to think that I'm in touch with my emotional intimacy, right?
Yeah, I say that people like us, we're empaths, we have a deeper attachment to the source. So we can feel what other things on this earth feel.
Okay, that's so true.
That's what I say. To save face, thinking, so people just don't call me a crybaby.
Yeah, literally. I'm just thinking about all the times I've called my mom and I was like, I just cried in the middle of Starbucks because there was like, I'm going to make you cry probably. There was like this, because there's a lot of homeless people around like my area. So it obviously makes me sad. But then I went to a Starbucks and it was a really, really hot day. And all this man did, like he didn't even really do anything, but he was clearly a homeless man. And he went in and asked for water. And then I started thinking about all the times like he needed water on a hot day.
I'm there. I'm there with you. I am on that train with you. You do not have
like, to. Like, he didn't even do anything. Like, he could have been like a love. Like, he didn't even ask for that. And I was just like, oh my God, like, he's asking for water. Like, this is the saddest thing I've ever seen.
I can't. I have to turn off when any of those, like, St. Jude commercials come on.
Yeah.
I have to turn off when they have the Feed the Children commercials, yeah. When they have those animal commercials.
The one with the
I
have song to turn those all off. What is that?
Girl, they ruined my day. I'll be messed up for the whole day.
In the arms of an angel.
Don't do that to me at dinner time.
I can't. Oh my God. I'm going to need an emotional reset after this.
Yeah. Definitely a hot mess over here. Like all the time. Like we've had like baby chickens die from like, you know, they just get ill or something like that. And like me and my son, we do like a full funeral for them.
As you should.
And my husband, he's like, what are you doing? And I was like, ugh. I was like, are you going to say a few words? He's like, I didn't even know that chicken existed.
Well, did he eat his eggs?
He's like, you got so many chickens around here. He's like, I can't keep track of who's who. But there was one chicken, I named her Gertie, and like she was ostracized from the group. And so I snuck and I brought her in the house because I was like, well, she's little.
Yeah,
like,
she needs some love.
He's not going to notice. Yeah, he's not going to notice. So I like had her in the house. And then, of course, I'm like, oh, she can watch TV with me on the couch. Like, she's cool. That's amazing. So he busts me. Yeah, he busts me with this chicken on the couch. And he's just like, what are you doing? Put it outside. So he's like, takes her and he puts her outside. We're eating dinner. She's standing at the back door and she starts using her beak and she's pecking, like knocking to be let back in. And this man, he was like, okay, we're going to let her back in.
He's like,
we're letting her back in the house. She lived inside the house with us for probably like 3 months.
What?
And she would just ride on his shoulder. She would just hang out on him. And I'm like looking at him. I'm like, oh, you know, Mr. Hard. No, these are just animals. And there he is. And then this man went and actually got on Amazon and bought like little bird stands for her and like all these toys.
That is so funny. That's like when we did that to my dad. We got a dog without like telling him. And he was like, no, I don't want a dog, blah, blah. Big dog means they poop a lot and whatever. And yeah, no, exactly. That's exactly what he said. And now they walk every day together and they're best friends. Yep. So.
Yep. So that's why I don't listen to people that when they say
that. Like, men need it more than us. I'm telling you. We just Amen cry on that. The outside, but they're crying on the inside and they need animals.
But that was my non-negotiable when I was single and I was dating. If you were not an animal lover, I didn't care how great you were. We would not.
I understand that. I really.
Period. Like, I didn't care how you could have been the hottest man, richest man in the world. If you did not like animals, we would not date.
I didn't know. I get that. Because if they're not a dog person, I will be a dog.
There's other problems. They have
if
other problems.
If they're a cat person, then I'm a little, I'm not a cat gal. But I've warmed up.
Yeah. I'm allergic, but I'll still take care of him. Okay. But I am like literally that movie Hitch when he was in the grocery store, that would be me.
I've warmed up to them. Okay. I didn't grow up with them. So that's why I feel like they make me also one kind of scratched me and attacked me a little when I was younger. So that's a little peaceful.
Their tongues. Yeah. You realize then that it is still a lion.
Yes. And it is not cuddly. They're not cuddly. I don't care what people say. I need to be hugged because I have too many emotional problems.
Yes. I sleep with my dog. Like, we embrace. Aww. Like, if I had a cat that would do that, then maybe I'd be like, oh, okay. Yeah. You know, just don't get near my eyes.
Okay. So you were at Napa. Our long-winded conversation.
This is how ADHD works.
I know. That's for real. This is my brain. But I know people are really seeing inside how my brain thinks like all the time. It's actually crazy.
I love it. It works just fine.
Agree. We get things done most of the time. In our own time. So did you kind of make a clean break? Like, because you felt like, okay, this is my time to leave. Was that scary for you? Was it nerve-wracking or were you like, nah, this is it. Like, I'm doing it.
Yeah, no. Like, literally, when the house is on fire, you have no choice but to run out of it.
Yeah.
Like, so there was no looking back. There was no crying over things that you lost or weren't going or didn't go the way you planned. All I had was the future to be better. And I knew that, like, I would be free and that I would be happy. And working in Napa and with all like the visitors that would come and they would come into the winery and just being able to like have fellowship with them and just hear about their lives and be pouring them wine and watching them enjoy themselves, I realized the beauty of hospitality and what I had always wanted to do. Like, I loved hosting people and watching them have magic, you know. Yeah, I didn't have my little Polly Pocket curtain, but I was creating that magic again and watching people enjoy themselves. And it just, like, I can honestly tell you, every day at that winery did not feel like work.
Wow.
It just, like, I couldn't wait. I would pick up extra shifts. I would open all the way and close, you know, like, because I loved it and I loved being there and I was so grateful to be there. And, you know, all my friends back in Miami were kind of just like, girl, you're having a midlife crisis, whatever.
Yeah, but, something's going on.
Yeah, they're like, what's happening? But then once they finally saw where I was working and saw what I was doing, then all of a sudden it changed to being like, oh my God, you did it. Like, aww, you freaking did it. You made it out of the rat race. Oh, I can't believe that the view outside of your office is Opus's vineyards. Like, how is that possible? So it was really validating and I loved it. But then I was also kind of like, all right, well, you're still young. What are you going to do? Are you going to stay in Napa forever? Or are you going to go, you know, see the world? Because now you're a Somme. So you can
go to so many places.
Yeah. Spain. You can go anywhere in the world. Wine is served almost everywhere. Uh-huh. So, you know, what are you going to do? Because you have this great opportunity. And so then all of a sudden I applied to like a bunch of hotels and stuff, because usually they have the best wine programs. Mm-hmm. And so then the Marriott in San Diego called and they were like, come down here. And I was just
love.
I was like, okay.
Yeah, that's a win for you.
Yeah, I was like, okay, say no more, you know. So I drove down there. It was like me, my two dogs. And I was just like, this is wonderful. And then when I got to the Marriott and they explained to me, they said, after you work a year here, you can go to any of our properties in the world. So I would, yeah.
Whoa, that's like almost too much choice.
That's too much choice. And, you know, they also have the Ritz-Carlton is theirs, you know, all that's Marriott. So I would sit and just look through the brochure at night at like all the places in the world that I could go, you know. And I was like, this is amazing. This is great. And it was when I got to the Marriott that I started working more with, like, you know, the chef and the kitchen people, because we didn't have that in Napa. We were just charcuterie plates and serving wine.
Yeah, but it's not.
It's not a restaurant.
Yeah.
And so I got into the kitchen, like really, really for the first time, got into a kitchen. And all of a sudden I was like, I like this. I like being back here. This is nice. And just like looking at all the tools that the chefs had and the way that they worked. And, you know, and so I would always be asking them like, what's this? What's that? What's this? You know, and then I would go and buy it and have it in my apartment, even though I had no business. I had like an electric stove. Like, what are you doing, girl? But
I will say I do have gas.
Yeah, I had an electric stove. I was not creating anything fantastic, but I had one heck of a wine collection in my apartment.
Oh, I'm sure. Now you have a cookbook and wine. You're the place to be.
Like, I was like, this is amazing. I'm just drunk and eating all day long my way through life.
Yeah, 1 p.m. drinking, 2 yeah. p.m. I've done wine tastings during the day. They're fantastic.
I mean, we would start tasting wine at like 9:30, 10. Like,
yeah, but then you have to pace it, because then it's like I didn't pace it the first time I did it ever. Yeah. And I was like, I need to learn.
Oh, yeah. No, unfortunately for me, I have a hollow leg, too. Like, I don't want to test it now in my 40s, but in my 20s and 30s, like, it took a lot to get me drunk. Like, I would be functioning, I'd be fine. But then I think that's just youth, I guess.
Well, it depends how much I've drinking. That's not
yes. it. Yes. Drunk
previously, I guess, because like, if I'm consistently drinking, then I can like handle it. I'm like, let's go. But like, it's, if it's been a few weeks or a few months, I'm like, all right, it's going to take one glass and we're out.
We are going to bed. We are turning on Netflix.
Yeah,
like, we are out. But no, so I really loved it. And then I started like kind of working on kitchen stuff and everything like that. And then I ended up meeting my husband.
Oh, is he a chef?
No, best story ever. So the Marriott's restaurant was right on the water.
Okay.
And so all the girls were telling me that like, the Navy ships were coming back in town. Like, and so I was literally standing out there pouring wine, watching my future husband on his ship come in to the dock.
That's so romantic.
No, but it wasn't, because like, we didn't even meet them.
Yeah, true. Like, you were just like, there's a ship.
There's a ship. There's a bunch of dudes on that ship.
There might be hot ones, but yeah.
I'm going to have a great summer. There's a lot of dudes on that ship. Like,
yeah, that would have been my thought too. I'm like, solid opportunity.
Yeah. Shooting fish in a barrel. They'll be gone in a few months.
Yeah.
We're good. Start it back over the next ship. Like, you know, I did not have these romantic plans. Like, clearly they were self-serving.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, what are we doing? What are we doing this summer? Like,
yeah. Just this weekend. I don't really need to see paths.
Yeah. I'm not even using my real name. I'm going by my middle name. Like, you know, we're good.
Stop. I know. I do that. I lie still.
Oh, all the time. I was at a bar hanging out with my girlfriend, mm-hmm. and we were drinking, and I gave this guy like a fake name. Oh. And then I kept drinking and having a good time, forgot, came back to the guy, gave him a completely different name. And he called me out on it, and all I could do was just, like, laugh.
Oh, my God. Stop. I've done that. I'm a few times are popping up in my head. But I was in Nashville with my sister and my best friend, and there were just some obnoxious guys. I was like, I don't want to tell them where I live. Like, I don't want them to know anything about me. So I forget what I said my name was. Maybe I think I was going through the Friends cast, and I just said lying. I was like, my name's Rachel or something.
Rachel.
And they were like, oh, where are you from? And I was like, oh, Michigan. Like, I know nothing about Michigan. I want to make that clear.
It's like the one state you know nothing about.
No, literally, I don't know why I said that. I was just like, Michigan. And I was like, I sell art. Like, I don't even know. And the guy was like, okay, where in Michigan do you live? And I couldn't think of one town. I said Flint. Where do you have the water? The water issues.
I couldn't even think of like Detroit or Saginaw.
I didn't even say Detroit. Like nothing. The first thing
Grand Rapids.
Went, I was like flailing in the wind. I was like, I was like, I don't remember anywhere in Michigan. So they were like, wait, isn't that where like the water is like bad? And I was like, oh, yeah, I moved out of there. And then eventually I was just like, I lied. I'm so sorry. I don't even know what to do right now.
Just fall on your sword and get out of there. Oh, I've told so many lies in bars. Yeah, like, so but I feel like you accept it because you know that's going to happen to you.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh, it's fun. I want to assume a new identity. Even though we're already not cool. Even though we're already.
Yeah, like why not? Like, come on. But yeah, so I ended up meeting my husband. He was in the Navy, and like I didn't know, but like all my girlfriends at the restaurant were telling me like, watch out for Navy guys. Like, either they're players or they're gonna try to wife you up. And I was like, well,
I have heard both those things.
Yeah, I was like, well, I'm fine with a player because I'm just passing through. I got the brochure at the Marriott. Like, I'm not staying here. Yeah.
You don't need it. You don't need the commitment.
Yeah, I don't care. Well, fast forward, not only am I married, but now I'm expecting a kid.
Oh my gosh, you really got wifed up.
I'm living on a Navy base. Like,
oh gosh, that's so funny. That's incredible though. Like, so did you end up traveling then?
No, we moved onto the Navy base in San Diego.
Oh.
So I was just like.
So you were living.
I was like, what happened? I was like looking back, I was like, how did this happen?
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, that's one of those things where you're like, you did not expect life to turn that way.
Not at all. Cause I was planning on never getting married again and I never wanted kids. Right. So I was just like, and now all of a sudden I'm sitting here 80 months pregnant.
Well, I mean, you went from a guy who was like, I don't care if you're not happy, to all of a sudden completely familial.
Yeah, to this guy who's like, I want to wife you up and take care of you and show you the world. And I'm just like, okay.
Like what do I do? Let's do it.
Sure. You know, yeah, okay, I'll go along with this joke. Ooh, is that how we play this game?
Oh, now I'm pregnant. Oh, it's not a joke.
Now I'm pregnant. Why are we in Vegas getting married? What's happening?
Is that where you got married in Vegas? No way. Did you do a chapel, like one of those?
Yes, we did this. We did like this cute little chapel that was right next to the courthouse.
Because
so it was the funniest thing. We set our wedding date for December 24th.
Okay.
But something happened in San Francisco where I had filed for divorce and they were having a furlough at the courthouse. Okay. And so they're sitting there and they're just like, we can't get your divorce decree because we are on like a work furlough. Mm-hmm. So I am sweating bullets, like on the airplane flying to Vegas, and I am on my phone like checking, and I don't want to freak him out.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, what are you going to do? And I'm checking on my phone and it is not signed. It is not showing up in the court records.
Oh,
like,
no.
Oh, and I'm just like, oh no, like, what am I going to do? So like basically panicking. Literally the next day when we went to the courthouse, the clerk there, he goes to look for it and it popped up.
Wow. That is luck.
And I did not tell my husband because I never wanted him to know. I waited till years later.
Well, I was going to say, if he listens to this, he's going to find out.
I waited till years later and I was like, hey, funny story. You know, when we were like heading to get married, I was still married.
Yeah, imagine you get to like the altar and they're like, your wife is already married. Or you're soon to be.
Cuff me for, what is it, bigamy when you're like married? Bigamy. I get hauled away from like the little white chapel.
Yeah, you are not in the Midwest, my friend. You're in Las Vegas. Sorry, don't hate me for that joke, people.
So yeah, so I was sweating bullets, but luckily it all worked out in my favor. And I was a free woman all of like 3 hours.
Wow.
And
then I got married. How did that feel?
I mean, I wanted to like party, but then I also had to get like ready for a new wedding. Yeah. So
there was really a contradiction there. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was just trying to survive. I was in survival mode at that point. Sorry, I was like, okay, I'm not going to go to prison for having multiple spouses. We're good. Cause I was totally going to go through with the wedding and just be like, can you hold off on filing the certificate?
Oh my gosh. Honestly, I would have just gone through with it too. I don't know what I would have done.
Like, what am I going to do? Like, my mom and dad had flown in. Like, oh, okay. Everybody had hotel rooms. I was too late. I could not go through with it.
Okay, so it was Elvis there? It wasn't, like, one of those? Was it?
No, because you had to pay extra. So I wasn't paying extra for Elvis. No, my wedding was, like, $300, start to finish.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Honestly, my friends who just paid for weddings are probably envious of that.
Yeah, I was like, not happening. I was like, $300. I was even trying to use coupons that I found online. I was like, I have a promo code. Is this still valid, this promo code?
But oh my God. Elvis, not included. No thanks.
Not included. Like, I don't even think like we had music because that was extra. Like,
oh my gosh.
I think the deacon who officiated like played something on his phone for like 2 seconds. The whole wedding was only 7 minutes long.
Stop. Okay, but what was the first wedding you had? Was it really grandiose? Like, was it this big?
Nope. I also went to Vegas for that one.
You're incredible. No notes. No notes.
I told you, I am cheap. Like, I'm not wasting money on like anything. But if you take me to a grocery store, I can bankrupt you, or a restaurant. Fair. But anything else, like, I am so cheap. Like,
oh, no, I'm such a money spender. I have no concept of the dollar. I really do.
Oh, no. Same. But, like, I spend it all on, like, food and wine.
Okay, fair.
So I'm still broke.
Yeah, wine was crazy. You should get some stuff for free now since you're, like, you were on Food Network.
Oh, I do. I get so much. But it's so funny. It's, like, once I like get stuff, then then like the me and me will be like, no, because I'm not going to promote this. I know I'll never use this and I'm not going to put it out there telling people I use this. So I'm very, very picky with who I accept as a sponsor because I'm not going to push something that I'm not going to use myself.
Yeah.
Like, because I've gotten burned by people promoting stuff and I'm like, this is awful. You never use this.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I understand that too. When I was first in the industry, they were sending me all this stuff, which was like
tons of stuff.
Incredible, but I didn't know any of the brands. And so like there were a few times when I was like, this brand sucks. Like, I cannot promote this brand. Like, and they would get really mad at me because they're like, we sent you all these products. Yeah. And I was like, listen, I can't promote this. So now mm-hmm. I've learned what to say yes to and what to say no to.
Yeah. I usually delete the emails that come in. And I'm like, no. Nah. I'm like, if it's not barbecue or food related, I just say no.
I'd actually love to get into your Food Network appearance.
Yes.
Talk about that. Where you were recruited or applied or both kind of.
Yeah, no. I had just started Instagram. And because I was a new mom, and so I was like, well, I need something to do all day. And I was barbecuing at the house, just trying to like teach myself. And then I was in this barbecue group and I was trying to understand how DMs work on Instagram. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it showed me that I had like a messages inbox, but then it also had like a
request,
not like a spam, but yeah, like a request kind of thing. And so one day I looked in there and it was like, I just saw the first line. It was like, hi, Erica, I'm a casting director. And I was like, oh, what's that?
Yeah.
Okay. So I clicked on it, but it had been from weeks prior.
I've done
so
that.
I clicked on it and I read it and I was like, this is probably fake. Like,
yeah, that's going to be your first thought. Yeah.
Like, why would they be sliding into my DMs? So I screenshot it and I put it into my barbecue group on Instagram, like our chat.
Oh, okay.
And like everybody's like, oh yeah, that's a scam. That's a scam. But then one guy, he goes, no, that's not. That's blah, blah, blah. She reached out to me for a show last year and I went through the whole process, but then I couldn't do it because I had a scheduling conflict. He's like, He's like, reach back out to her if it's not too late. And all of a sudden now I'm panicking. I'm like, I just missed the boat. I just lost my shot. You know, I was just thinking I'll compete in barbecue, be on the competition circuit. I never once thought of anything past Instagram and competing. Like, I never thought I would be on television. Like, I was like, that's just not going to happen. That's like a needle in a haystack, you know?
Right.
So I was like, that's not going to happen. So I reached out to the lady and I was like, hey, I know this is late, but yeah, I'm interested. I'd love to talk to you. And she writes back like immediately and she's like, let's set up a Skype interview. And I'm like, who uses Skype?
Skype.
I was like, you're what? You want my social security number too, girl?
Yeah. My credit card.
The name of the street I grew up on. Like, yeah. So I kind of like stopped responding to her after that. And then she was like, then she started calling me. And so once she called me, I did my research. I backed into it like the lawyer I am. Mm-hmm. And I realized like she was legit. So I called her back. And then the next thing you know, like I didn't hear anything for a year. So I was like, oh man. Yeah. I was like, okay, but at least they noticed me. And it kind of like put the fire to like put better content out there and to really like, you know, amp up my competing in barbecue and having footage and putting stuff out there. I was like, and so then that following January, all of a sudden I get a call and they're like, can you be in Austin, Texas in 2 weeks?
Whoa. Were you nervous?
No, because at that point, this was during the pandemic. Like, I was stuck with a baby at home 24/7. They could have called me for Deadliest Catch or Ice Road Truckers. I would have signed up.
Literally anything, just get me out of this house.
Get me out of this house for a week or two. Because they were like, oh, we'll probably have you for 2 weeks and longer if you do well. And I was like, in my head, I was like, well, I know I'm not going to do well. So, but you're promising me at least a week or two in a hotel room in a bed by myself. Sign me up.
You didn't even have to go on the show. They just offered you a hotel.
I didn't even care. I was like, they're probably not going to pick me anyway. I was like, because they were like, they're like, you're not on the show. You're a finalist. We'll discuss it when you come down. So I was like, jokes on you guys. Like, I just want to sleep in a bed without a little kid like kicking me in my back and peeing all over the place. But no, so I went down there and I did practice really hard. Like once I realized I was going down there and I knew I only had like 2 weeks to really get myself ready. I just like went into complete just like training combat mode. I was in my kitchen at my house and I was timing myself cooking recipes that I knew how to make, making sure that I had all these recipes in my head that I would never need to refer to a book or, you know, a computer, that they were only recipes that I actually knew. I put a mirror in front of my face and then I would be like cooking. Because you never know what you look like when you're cooking, like what facial expressions you make.
Oh yeah, no, I would look so mean. Yeah. I think I just would be like,
I have resting bee face.
No, me too.
Yeah.
So I've been told.
Yeah. So I put like a mirror, sometimes a camera in front of my face, and I would just cook in front of it and then go back and watch it just to see the expressions I make. And like, I made some really ugly expressions. I was like, oh God.
Yeah. You look at the mirror, you're like, ah.
I know I was. I was like, ah, don't turn to stone. But
Medusa.
Don't look directly at her. Oh God. But no. So I was really going through that and I realized like, don't try anything different. Only do things that you can do muscle memory, you know? And that's easier said than done, because when I got there and I saw all the other contestants and like, you know, they were like, they had been in barbecue their whole lives. They owned restaurants. They were like barbecue royalty and stuff like that. And then here was me like bringing up the rear. And even on the show, they gave everybody nicknames and mine was the underdog. And I was just like, but it was true. I really was the underdog.
But that also would make people root for you more, because I always root for the underdog.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was true. I was like, I'm a new mom that just started barbecuing a year ago, you know, and all these people have laps of experience on me.
But you had competition wins since when you started.
Yeah.
Yeah, by then.
Yeah, but I had just been competing. Like, right before that, I hadn't won anything. So I was just out there, you know. I didn't have any feedback from the universe. if I was good, if I was awful, like, I didn't know. And then I was going on the show and I was just like, oh God, you know, we'll find out how you are, if it's bad or if it's good.
No. Yeah. And I would also assume, like, being a pit master is mostly male dominated.
Oh yeah.
So
oh yeah.
Did that add to the pressure when you were on it? Did you feel like you were like, hey, I got to represent like women here? Or
I really, cause we kind of had like an equal group of men and women. But it was more like I needed to represent home cooks because almost everybody else on the show was a chef or a restaurateur. So I was like, I'm representing home cooks across America, you know, that all we have is like grit and determination and we're scrappy.
You're the barbecue Ina Garten.
That's why I love her. I was just like, because I really had like, and nobody was really expecting anything great from me. So it was actually worked out my benefit because all the other people, they were just like competing against each other and nobody was really checking for me.
Oh, so you came up behind them.
Yeah. So I started coming up behind. I was like, I didn't get kicked off. I didn't get kicked off. I didn't get kicked off this week either. I was like, okay. And then by the time, like, I actually started like whooping butt, the playing field had been eliminated because they were going so hard against each other.
Yeah. They forgot you were invisible.
Yeah. I was like, this is good. You know, this is really good. And I never expected to win, you know, but I remember Bobby Flay, he told me when I was cooking, he was like, hey, he's like, I just want to let you know. Cause I guess he saw that like, I was like the kind of like the outcast a little bit. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I want to let you know, he's like, the reason I've won everything I've won is because I don't cook outside of myself. I only cook what I know. And that's what I do well. And it was almost like a Mr. Miyagi moment. Like all of a sudden I just heard like, only cook what you know.
Yeah, like, for the rest of your life, Bobby Flay is in the back.
Just cook what you know, girl. And it really did instill confidence in me because I was like, okay, Bobby Flay just told me, cook what you know. Don't try to cook like these other people.
Yeah, because they're always trying to like go fancy and harder and they don't even sometimes know if it's going to turn out.
Yeah. And I've never been one of those fancy, you know, using tweezers to put, I cook meals that feed families. That started resonating with the judges because they were like, I remember like, it was like two episodes. I was just cooking stuff that I would have cooked at my house. And I remember the judge was like, this reminds me of how my mom used to cook on Sunday.
You got the nostalgia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This reminds me of Easter, you know? And I was just like, okay. Yeah.
I love that. That was Michael Simon and Eddie Jackson.
Yep.
Was your
name? Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. I love Michael Simon. He's the best.
Love him so much.
We vibe.
Like seriously crush. Yeah. He's a great human being. Like in just in general, like he is just great across the board. And when he starts laughing, he has a very infectious laugh.
He does. Yeah. I've interviewed him a few times and he is so funny. We, we bonded on the fact that we both hate ketchup.
Well, next time you interview him, ask him about his love for Skyline Chili.
Okay, he's gonna be like, this is coming out of left field.
he's gonna have a total breakdown. He thinks it's like the grossest thing ever.
Oh, okay, I love that.
Whereas I stock my RV full of cans of Skyline Chili. Like I could eat it all day long.
So funny. Yeah, he has strong opinions, but I'm obsessed with it.
Oh, obsessed. But yeah, so then, you know, and all of a sudden I looked up and then I won, you know, and it was insane and it was surreal. And I was like, what the heck just happened?
How do you feel like, cause I'm sure it helped you grow professionally, but how do you feel like it helped you grow personally? Because you're just like constantly under the stress, you know?
Yeah. Well, honestly, it validated every, like my journey for my whole life, you know, because I knew as a little girl that I was supposed to be in culinary. So it really kind of just like brought the ship back home and was like, you're home now. This is where you're supposed to be. This is where you're happy. And this is where you will take off to do whatever it is in the world that you really want to do. And so it was just like validation more than anything. Like, I didn't care like the win. I didn't think like, oh, I'm going to win this and I'm going to be on TV for the rest of my life. Like, no, it was girl, your whole journey, everything you went through to get here to this point is telling you that this is where you're supposed to be. Now, what you do with that from here is on you, but you know, and the world has just told you that you're supposed to be here. Mm-hmm. That was it.
Yeah. And it's so funny too, because you're talking about your parents and how they're kind of go-getters and, you know, their entrepreneurial stuff. So you kind of, I don't know, followed their path, I guess it seems like. Yep. Like, it seems like that kind of passed down for you and you're like not really afraid to take risks.
No, I was like, you take a risk, it pays off. If not, you'll always land on your feet. Like, just pick yourself back up. But the worst thing is to sit around in somewhere that you know is beneath your potential and your destiny because you're scared. That is the worst thing you can do in your life. So it's like, if you view it like that, you have no fear of failure because you know that you're only failing up.
Right. Because you'll always learn from your failures, I feel.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had quite a few.
I've had tire tracks across my back, like been in the gut. but you have to do those things because they really do reduce your level of fear and they help make you more ambitious. And people think that's weird. Like, they think that's a reverse, but it's like when you face your fear, when you fail, you come out stronger because you're like, okay, been there, did that. Okay, here's the lessons I learned. Now moving on, here's what we're going to do.
I also feel like it just like fuels your fire a little bit. It's like, okay, this didn't work out, but now I know that's not going to work out. So now I have a narrower path to like be like, show everyone what I can do kind of deal.
Exactly. And it's like, and I always believe like in the beauty of comeback stories. We are Americans. We love comeback stories.
Love the underdog.
Like, come on.
We do. I mean, I used to watch American Idol with my parents and it would always be a good comeback story. Yeah. I don't know why that came to me.
Always.
Was there a time when you were filming? Because I've talked to a few people who have been on like Food Network shows and, you know, it was their kind of first one. So they were like, well, now I'm cooking and I have to multitask because I'm on camera. Was there a time when you felt like, oh shit, like I just messed something up? Or were you just like, you were just.
I was messing stuff up all the time.
So that's a yes.
Yes, girl. No, I was messing stuff. I was messing stuff off like 24/7.
Was there a time when you're rescuing where you're like, I'm going home? I tried to watch the show, but shout out to Spectrum. It won't let me watch it through my television, whatever plan. So I tried.
No, I counted. I was on the bottom and up for elimination more than any contestant in the history of that show.
Stop. Wow. So you really were the true comeback.
Yes. I mean, they would have you sit on this, like, I think it was like a bourbon barrel, okay. Like when you're getting judged. It had my butt prints in there because I sat there so much.
But Bobby Flay believed. She did.
He did. No, he would always call me counselor and he'd be like, good morning, counselor. Like, and I was like, oh, I was like, I love it. And then I remember it was so cool. I needed to make whipped cream. And I mean, we're in Texas, like, and they would not let us use a mixer or a blender.
Oh
yeah. You had to earn that.
Like Survivor.
Like prison, the bake-off.
You gotta pay. You have like three ribs to get this.
Yeah, I'm like selling people stuff in order to get use of the blender. But no, so they wouldn't let us use the blender. We had to earn it. And of course I hadn't earned it. And so I really, but for this recipe, I needed to make whipped cream. And I was like sitting there and, you know, and it's hot outside and I'm up there trying to like whip it. And it's just like, it's frothing, but it's not happening. And I had 20 minutes and to make the whole dish. And like out of nowhere, like the white knight, like Bobby just comes up behind me and he's like, here, let me make that whipped cream for you. And like, I had basically at that point resigned myself that I was going to fail that challenge. And then here comes Bobby and he's just like whipping this cream up in like 2 minutes, just manually. And I just had like this awestruck, just like, you are a culinary god. Like,
that was legend.
Yeah. I was like, this is why you're Bobby.
He came
Flay.
Out from the heavens like, to make you whipped cream.
He did. He like, yeah, but literally like, he just like descended down.
Glowing light.
Yeah, it really was. I think there was like light and like little, what do you call those cherubs that were floating? Yeah, and he's just in there, and he's like, "Hey, it's all in the wrist," you know, and he's like, in his little accent, he's like, "It's all in the wrist." And I was just sitting there, and I was so grateful and thankful because I knew that that whipped cream was not going to get done on my watch. And I ended up winning that challenge, and I was just like, "Oh, I love you. Thank you so much."
Like, I love that. Well, are you going to plan on going any more Food Network shows in the future, you think? Or is there any you want to?
I don't know. I've turned down quite a few.
Oh, okay, Flex.
Yeah, because I've just kind of like been there, did that. And then the reality of it, or maybe it's just like the lawyer side of me. The only reason people would want to see me back on the show, like producer wise or whatever, is because I would make a bigger impact if I got kicked off or if I failed early. You know what I mean? Because there's really no win. Like, the shock and awe would be if I got kicked off as the master of Q, this competition queen that's won barbecue competitions all across the world. But if I were to actually win the show, people would be like, "Oh, of course she did." So there's no benefit for a competition show. If I did a show, it would have to be something more like lifestyle or reality, but no more competition shows. I don't see the benefit for me in being back in the competition. And that's the only things I've really been getting offered. So I just say no. It's not worth it.
No, that's a really good point. I guess I've never really thought about that it'll hurt more, I guess, because you're already seasoned.
Oh, yeah.
Have they asked you to host or judge?
No, there was one show where they were like, "We would like to have you come as a guest judge," but it got put on hold. So okay. I'm waiting to see if that will happen or not, but I don't hold my breath for any of that kind of stuff. I'm just
until you're literally there. Yeah. Like, I don't believe it until,
like, I don't block off my calendar. I don't, you know, I don't do any of that. I'm just like, eh. It's like, I'm here out on my farm. Like, it's pretty good out here. I was like, but if you really do need a spot and the show is actually going to go, because I don't think people realize how many shows never see the light of day.
A lot. I've learned that through my acting friends here who have been pinned for stuff for months and then nothing happens, or like.
And it ruins your whole schedule for like a whole year, because you're basing that you're going to be going and you're going to be gone. You're making all these plans. And then literally at the last moment, it gets scrapped or it gets pushed back.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm on Instagram. The people who are going to watch me on TV, they go to my Instagram.
Yeah, and your YouTube and your series.
I need to actually work on my YouTube. I'm so bad. I haven't like updated that thing in a year.
Did I not promote that?
You can. I mean, there's stuff on there. But no, Everybody tells me, they're like, "You need to get on YouTube and do longer format." And I was like, "I will." And then I don't.
It's a lot of work. It takes me a lot to even do social. I'll do your social media for the podcast. No worries. But it takes some time for me to actually sit down, because it just is like, you just want to make it good. And also, you're just running around doing so many other things that I understand.
And like you said, we're squirrels, so.
I'm always behind. It doesn't matter. I've just accepted my fate.
I always tell people, I'm like, don't call me, because I'm probably just sitting looking at the phone. I'm not going to answer. Like, I was like, but text me. Text me, and I will text you all day.
Oh, see, no, I'm worse. I think they should call me. I probably won't answer, but. Texting, I will not answer for like a week. I'm so bad. Unless I'm on my computer.
Oh my God. Like,
I'll let you know I'm alive, but like, I probably will not answer for several days, because I just either forget or it's just like a lot of work. I don't know.
I'm usually good with texting and responding to instant messages, like DMs. I try to go through those like once a week. I try to go through and answer everybody.
Well, with the holidays coming up, are they asking a million barbecue questions?
Yeah. So, you know, everybody wants to smoke a turkey, not fry it. Everybody wants to smoke a meatloaf. So, but I basically just like, I pre-plan all that.
Smoke a meatloaf.
Oh, it's so good. If you've never had smoked meatloaf, like I made one last night for my son just for fun, out of chicken. I did a chicken loaf, a barbecue chicken loaf for him. If you've never smoked a meatloaf, like, you're missing out on all the good things in life. When you make spaghetti, if you're making like bolognese, like smoke the meat, smoke the beef before you put it in your sauce. It's crazy. Whoa. Like the dish becomes insanely delicious. Like,
that's blowing my mind right now. I've literally never once had thought of that or seen that. That is so interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
Any meat that I use in any recipe, I'll quickly smoke it, and then maybe it's gonna, unless I'm boiling something, because that's just a waste. But yeah, right. Any meat in a recipe, I'll smoke it first and then I'll cook it however I was planning on cooking it. And it just, people don't understand why the food tastes so good. And I'm like, it's not me. It was the smoker.
It's smoker.
It was a smoker.
I know we're kind of like over our hour time. Do you still have some time to talk, or are you good?
I do. I'm like, the only thing I have to do is go out and check on my horses, but it's raining right now. With this hair, I'm not going outside.
You brushed it and everything. You,
I brushed it. I curled it for you. Like, I'm not going outside.
Oh, you're so sweet. I literally didn't do that.
You're like pulling it down. You're like,
oh. I'm like pulling. Yeah, you can't see me, but I'm pulling my hair down because it honestly is frizzy mess, but it's up. This is a few days need to be washed. That's my situation.
I need to wash mine too. It's girl. But it's, it looks so bad
after you don't wash it for a few days.
Yes. So. I was like, well, they're not seeing me live. They can't smell it.
No, I'm only putting a few clips on, so you'll look good. Don't worry. I make everyone look good. Okay.
Oh my god, I love it.
I am curious. So I normally do like a short little game about, it's like a lightning round. So basically I would say some barbecue and grilling related food and food trends, and you're gonna tell me if you're, it's a smash or pass kind of thing.
Okay, I love this.
Okay. Normally I do, you can say for or against too, but I feel like you're fun and we'll do smash or pass.
I like smash and pass.
Okay, cool. First one. Cauliflower steaks.
Smash.
I like those too. I agree. Smash. Okay. Two smash burgers.
Pass.
You don't like them?
They're so overrated and trendy. Like, no. Agreed. If you're going to do that, just make a loose meat burger. Like, those are the best things ever now. Those are my jam. Loose meat burgers, I'll take that any day over anything else.
What do you mean by loose meat?
So basically, you cook the crumbles up like you're going to make a sloppy joe. But okay. With no sauce, and then you form it back into a burger patty.
Oh.
It's insane. If you're grilling onions or whatever you're mixing in with your burger, it just goes back into the loose meat, and it's insane.
Wait, that sounds,
I mean, you make me want one right now, but I'm too lazy to cook it.
No, I was looking through all of your like Instagram and stuff, and I am dying for barbecue. Like, it was like 9 a.m. this morning when I was doing that, and I was like, I would kill for some ribs right now.
Oh my gosh. I get like that with brisket. And I'm like, why did I click on the Instagram and look at all my friends' brisket posts?
Oh, yeah. Third one. Do you like citrus marinades?
Smash, smash, and smash all day.
Fourth one. Barbecue pork belly.
I'll pass. I've had way too much of it in my life, and including recently. So I'm good.
Yeah. I know that's been a thing because a few chefs have told me about they've been using it, but I don't know. It doesn't really like,
I mean, I make it all the time. It's like my backup if I just, I'm not feeling creative. So I'm just like, eh.
Fifth one, grilled pizza.
Eh, pass.
I agree.
I'm not a pizza fan.
You're not a pizza fan? Did you just say that?
I'm not a pizza fan.
Whoa. No.
That's... I'm not a pizza fan. What are those things? Calzones?
Yeah. The ones that are stuffed?
I love those, though. Yeah.
Wait.
But I just don't like pizza. I don't know what it is.
But calzones are literally pizzas, but like folded.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the way it looks. But I am not into slices of pizza. And I absolutely abhor thin crust pizza. If I have to eat pizza, if it's a thin crust, I'm like protesting.
Okay, you're kind of killing me.
Like, I might flip the table.
You're kind of killing me a little.
I'm not. But then, yeah, I love calzones, so I don't know what that means.
But I think calzones are like, because they're encased in bread, they're cooked differently, so they're more crunchy almost, no? I don't know.
Maybe that's what it is, because I love dough.
Yeah, you probably just love bread.
I do. I have a bread addiction. Like, I'll just eat slices of bread. Oh, yeah. It's pretty nasty.
No, I literally did that yesterday. Are you kidding?
I did it this morning.
They sent some. Oh, I can plug this because I really like them. Wild Grain is this kit where you can get like a lot of like gluten-free like food and stuff, but not just, I don't know if it's actually just gluten-free. I have to check. Ooh. But they sent me all this food, like pastas and a sourdough that you can just pop in the oven. And so I was like,
yes,
cooking it up yesterday. And I put the sourdough in the oven. I ate half the loaf. So that's a testament. It's good, guys. I really, really liked it.
You're going to make me go buy some.
I know.
You gave me like the real girl plug.
I did. Okay. That was my one job. So I'll email them and let them know. No, but I genuinely do.
I'm going to go order some.
I do. I really like them because I try to eat gluten-free when I can. Just, you know, hot girls have stomach issues. I love that.
I think I need to go gluten-free then. Is it stomach issues?
Yeah. Well, it's also gluten-free just makes you feel like lighter. Like if you want to eat a pasta, you don't feel as heavy afterwards because it could just take my stomach a long time to like digest a regular pasta. Ooh. But that's my issue.
Oh, I might try it. I might try that.
It was good.
You actually have me intrigued. Like the wheels and the hamster. They're turning.
Oh, yay.
I've never tried anything gluten-free in my life.
Oh, no. You're missing out, honestly, because there are some really, really – I'll send you a cinnamon roll recipe that's better than any other cinnamon roll I've ever had, and it's gluten-free. Okay?
Sold.
I have her on my podcast. How did you know
cinnamon rolls are my weakness?
No, literally. I had her. Her name is Jenna. She is the brand Butternut Bakery. And I literally had her on my podcast because I liked her cinnamon roll recipe that much. So.
Okay. Sold. That's my weakness. My secret dessert weakness is cinnamon rolls.
Okay. So not pizza, but I'll send you that.
Yeah. Pizza is going to collect dust.
Yeah. It's really just hurt me a little, but I'm going to move past it. My final question for you, I ask this to every single guest. If there is one cooking utensil or appliance you think everyone should splurge on, what would it be and why?
Ooh, I mean, I'm going to say knives. Mm. You have to have a quality knife. Like if you don't have a quality knife, you're going to struggle that much more with the presentation of your dish. And, you know, if you start jagged cutting meat, I mean, then you just ruined all that hard work you did. And especially being in barbecue, like that slice line, that could be the difference between a $10,000 check and going home.
Oh, yeah, that's so true. Because if you go like against it, then it's going to get all.
Yeah. So you have to have the best knife.
I got to show you this. So this is right next to me right now. Curtis Stone, I interviewed him.
I'm like, what is she grabbing?
Curtis Stone, I interviewed him a few weeks ago, and he sent me home with his giant electric carving knife.
Holy crap. Like, holy moly. That is
it's too much power for me. I don't know what to do with it.
You need to start going massacring some turkeys and whole chickens.
Literally, I was like, almost.
You need to grab some beef ribs and just go to town.
I was like, it's like this electric thing. He was like, do you have like one of those like forks, those prong forks. I was like, no, of course I don't have that.
He just takes it back from you. He's like, you're unworthy. Yeah. Give it
you
back.
Know, I was like, this is like too much power for me, but I will host a Friendsgiving just so I can like use this electric knife.
No, you need to use that knife. Like you need to get cut. You just need to go full like fruit ninja all around the house.
Oh, I love that game.
My son is obsessed with it right now. Even in real life, he talks like that. He just, when he's like explaining things, and all I see is like fruit. Yeah. All I see is fruit.
He's sliced. Wait, I actually used to be so obsessed with that. You unlocked that memory just now for me. Wow.
It's amazing. Fruit Ninja is addicting. Like, I don't care what you say. I don't care what age you are. That is a great game.
I'm literally downloading that again. I'm sick of Candy Crush. Candy Crush can go.
Well, I got the wind out of my sails when I realized in Candy Crush, like, the levels keep going. There's no final level.
Oh, yeah. There's probably someone just writing every level. That's true. It's never ending.
Yeah, so I was like, I'm not going to play this because what am I playing it to? There's no final battle.
Oh, you're so right. It's just for the rest of our lives. It's going to be a never ending game.
Yeah, no.
Oh, that's so funny.
I remember I was on the airplane and I had spent all this money buying like power up packs and bonus candies. And then I started scrolling to see what the final level was. And there wasn't one. And I remember on the airplane, I just like deleted it right there.
When you start to spend money, that's when you know there's a problem.
That's the first step, is to admit it.
The other first step is acknowledging the problem and looking at your credit card statement.
I was always like, man, how am I like down? Oh, I didn't buy anything. And then I'll like go on my like debit card and I'm like, oh, 2 a.m. You bought a multi-pack from Google Play.
It all comes back to 2 a.m. It all comes back to us being.
And I remind, and I see myself in my pajamas in my little rat's hole.
I gotta buy the next power up. I gotta buy it.
I gotta buy the next power up right now.
I can't. Okay,
oh,
well,
gosh, such a mess.
You are literally the most incredible human being on the planet. So thank you for taking the time out. And I hope your chickens are okay, because now I'm a little concerned.
Oh, they're always fine. I'm going to go check. I'll be sending you photos. I'm like, nope, they were just mating.
Oh my God. Well, I don't know if I need the mating photos, but you could just let me know.
I'll send it to you as a Christmas card. I'll be like, just for you.
Happy holidays. Here's my chickens.
Oh, God. That would go great at the post office.
I think they would love that. They would probably keep it for themselves and put it up.
Yeah, if you never get it, you'll know what happened. Oh, well, thank you for having me. I love you. I loved hanging out with you in Wyoming, and hopefully we get to do it again.
I know. I got to go back. Or we could just go somewhere else. Vegas?
I mean, if you get married, I'll give you my promo coupon.
Okay, and then maybe I'll afford Elvis. Maybe I can afford it.
For you, I'm a spring for Elvis for you, girl. You don't even have to worry. I'm going to pull out all the stops.
That's the sweetest thing someone's ever said to me.
I got you covered. You'll even have real flowers at your wedding.
Whoa. See, that's a commitment.
No plastic bouquet.
No. Flowers are expensive, so you better get ready.
I got you.
You got like a solid 10 years, I'm sure. Don't worry.
Don't worry. I'll be sitting on ready, waiting for the moment.
Okay.
Oh, gosh.
All right. So you can follow Erica on Instagram at Blue Smoke Blair to keep up with her latest recipes and projects.
See y'all there.
Hey, fellow foodies. Thanks so much for listening. And don't forget to leave me a review. While you're at it, make sure to follow me at livinforfoodpod on Instagram or TikTok, or email me at livinforfoodpod@gmail.com. Let me know what you're cooking up this week, which guests you would like to see on the podcast, or tell me your opinions on the latest viral food trend. And in case you're just joining me, there is an entirety of season 1 ready and waiting for you. Until next time.